this? Yep, it's the Jackie Gleason Show's theme song. Actually, the name of the song is Melancholy Serenade, and it was written by none other than Jackie Gleason. So, with this piece of opening nostalgia, you probably already know that we're headed back in time. But time, past and present, is what this is all about, really. And just what is this? Well, this is the very first session of what I call First Person, an oral history chronicle of American broadcast television by some of the people that have led the way in many parts of an industry that's been changing, really, since it was born. By speaking directly to those that were there and had a front row seat, our goal is to preserve the events, innovations, and personalities that helped shape the technology, companies, productions, systems, and a lot more that are all necessary parts of broadcasting. Today's guest is Lou Bazin. Lou spent his entire career at RCA as an engineer and has over 50 patents registered in his name. He's also the recipient of the Sarnoff Award and played major roles in the development of some of RCA's most important cameras, like the TK-44, TK-45P, TK-47, and the landmark TK-76, the world's first electronic news gathering camera. Like the good engineer he is, Lou is kind of using a schematic during the interview, a sort of diagram of his work life at RCA. And by referring to his annual employee reviews, which detail his duties and the dates he performed them, we'll discover some interesting timelines that in the past have been mostly guesswork since all the RCA corporate records are gone. So let's get started with the first question. And Lou, that is, just when did you start with RCA?
All right, let me just start with when I started with the division. How's that?
Okay.
I'm just looking now at some of these old performance reviews, which were interesting, and the write-ups are pretty good, and they tell you pretty well what I worked on. Prior to the broadcast division, I worked in the computer division, and that was about 1961.
Is that when you joined RCA?
Actually, I joined RCA prior to that. Let's go back a little further. I worked for RCA. I started as a technician back in 1951. It was 1951, and then I worked for about 1 year. I guess it was 1950. Let's go back, 1950 to 1951. And then I got drafted in 1951, went into the Army, and served 2 years, and put some time in Korea. And then I came back, and I had the GI Bill, and I went to Drexel University today, and I took my courses in physics, and I went to school from 1954 to 1959. And during that time, they had a co-op program that allowed you to spend 6 months in industry and 6 months in college. So that six-month interval was with RCA to 1959. So I continued some of my service with RCA from the time I was drafted to 1959, when I became an engineer working, electronics engineer working for RCA. And that was in the computer division. And at that point, there was an opening in the broadcast division. And at this time, I was very interested in television. And this was around 1960. And
do you remember?
I guess I had worked on a pickup tube on that optical character reader. And I started to get interested in cameras. This was a Viticon tube that we use on the optical character reader. And I'm trying to figure out when I went up to broadcast exactly. 1964, Bobby.
All right.
Okay. The camera that I started with in broadcast was a TK-27, and it was a film camera.
Right.
And the film camera at that time was kind of a takeoff on the TK-42. That was a four-tube film camera, and it used four Vidicons. And according to this, I worked on some modules for that camera. It was some monitoring modules, color test circuits. Detector module was a way of setting the camera up. All right, those modules that I worked on when I first started in 1964 were eventually moved over to the TK-42. And I was responsible for product design of Vidicon deflection modules and protection circuits on the TK-42, product design of horizontal and vertical deflection modules. This entailed the circuits for driving the 4.5-inch image Orthicon.
Now, those circuits slid in and out, and those were...
That plugged in.
Yeah, those were... That was a real breakthrough. And didn't Harry Wright have something to do with the design, with the concept of the plug-in modules?
Yeah, Harry actually set up the, I believe, the whole idea of plug-in modules on camera frames.
Right.
And what we did was just build our circuitry into those plug-in boards. And so the circuit design was actually hand-wired into those modules and then plugged into the camera. If you look at a TK-42 module, you'll see a bunch of pins on a printed, it's not a printed circuit board. We didn't have that yet. And there were pins, and we wired components between pins. So Harry, I guess, did some of the mechanical work on the module design prior to when I got there. And that was 1964, I said.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, as we all know, the TK-42 and 43 did have some problems. And that kind of brings me around to a point that I want to go to. Matter of fact, on my website, in the gallery section, there's a story called the TK-44 Secret Backstory. And you were very involved in the TK-44 development, and it was really something that was done on the sly. Didn't Larry Thorpe work with you on that?
Larry Thorpe came in from the BBC in London.
Yeah, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was one of the engineers they hired from England. And he did the pre-amplifier for the TK-44. But at this time, I had worked on the 42. And I was pretty deeply involved in deflection systems on the 42. And I started thinking about how would you build. I told you the story about when we showed the 42, we had another camera called the TK-44. And the 44 was what we called our Isocon camera.
Uh-huh.
It took an image Orthicon out of the TK-42 because of noise performance. And it was supposedly a quieter pickup tube than the 4.5-inch image Orth.
Now,
and we never really had much success with it.
Was that the four-tube design of the 44?
It was a four-tube, but it had a different pickup tube for the black and white channel than the TK-42. That pickup tube was called an Isocon, and it was developed at the Princeton laboratories, and it turned out it wasn't a whole lot better than what we had in the 42. So at that time when we showed it, I believe the NAB showed, a National Association of Broadcasters, showed cameras down in Washington, D.C., and Philips showed up with the 3 Plumicon, and I guess it was the PC 60. 60?
Yeah, would that be, what, 65, 1965?
That's correct. Okay. Hold on, I'm going to look at that review here.
All right.
Deflection circuits, design deflection circuits for the 44 was around 67. Let me go a little further here. 68, TK44 camera responsible for product design and development of the following modules for the 44. TK44A camera. This is right off my performance review. I'm going to send you these. And you can read them because it was the write-up from management as to what I had done.
All right.
Okay, and it says here the TK44A camera responsible for product design and development of the following modules, and it talks about deflection, deflection amplifier, tube control circuits, and in addition, he had major responsibility of systems design, responsible for assisting NBC evaluate 2 TK44A prototype cameras in New York.
What year was that?
This was 1968. 8-1-1968.
Okay.
And I guess that's when I first met Fred Himmelfarb. Responsible for assisting NBC evaluate. Fred was the systems guy up at NBC. And I spent about 6 months up there with him. And that was a very interesting period because that was really an exposure to what the broadcasters were doing with cameras. Fred was very sharp on what was required to make, you know, a color camera work in a studio.
Yes, and Fred was a huge force in the TK-41. He came to NBC from RCA, I think, with the TK-40s and developed them and kept sharpening them through the entirety of their run. And Fred was just an amazingly talented man. And unfortunately, NBC had become quite disappointed with RCA, and they were needing something to kind of be the next step after the TK-41s. And they actually were considering the Relcos, and I'm sure this was kind of at a time when the TK-44 was on a parallel track, but the 44s were still, I think, at RCA thought of as a four-tube camera and using something other than Plumicons. But Fred had been, he had a TK-60 on the bench, as I understand it, and you were there.
PC-60, right?
Right, yeah. And I understand there's a story. He'd already been working with Norelco. He wanted a shorter Plumicon. But there was a contact with Amperex, the guys that represented Philips and sold the Plumicon tubes here in the U.S. And was it you that went up to Amperex to meet with them?
Hey, you got a good story there. Yeah, it was actually the manager of the broadcast camera group and I. They selected us to go up there to talk to the Amperex people about Plumicons. And I'll tell you, Bob, the whole idea was really almost, you know, why would they do that? Because they had us.
Yeah.
We didn't have a pickup tube. And they had it, and they were making pictures that were superior to what the 42 could do.
Right.
No doubt about that. And so we went up to Amperex in Long Island, and they even had a bulletin board, "Welcome, RCA." And it was on the bulletin board, and they had our two names up there, Lucas Bazin and Norm Hobson. And we were given everything in putting a Plumicon into a camera. It entailed the tubes and the deflection yokes, which were highly important.
Right, right.
To deflect those tubes. And they gave us what they had used in their cameras. And the only thing I can tell you about that, why would they do it? And it was because they thought they could make more money selling those tubes than selling cameras.
I bet they did.
Well, let me go back a little bit to Fred and I working up at NBC. I had taken a lot of the circuitry that we used on the 42 and reworked it. And I had this whole system designed for the 44 in my head, and all of the ways we were going to deflect and get signals out of three Plumicons, and that was all ready to go. And all I had to do was tell us we had the tubes and the deflection yokes, and we could build a camera. And that became the 44. By the way, I consider that the best camera that RCA ever put out.
Which one, the 44 A, B, or C?
A, yes. The 44A, it's listed as the A, because remember what I told you, the 44 was that Isocon version
right.
of the 42.
Right, right.
And we gave up on that.
Right.
And when we saw the Plumicon camera working at Washington, we decided we had to have a three Plumicon camera.
Well, that was kind of against, though, what the upper management wanted. They were still sticking to that four tube story. And you and it was
the whole idea of four tubes was going when I started in that division. And quite a few people felt it wasn't necessary to have four tubes in there. See, RCA wanted a good black and white picture. This was before color got started.
Right.
And four tubes gave them what they were looking for, I guess. The VPs, all in the head of RCA, they didn't have a Plumicon, but they had a 4.5-inch image orthicon, which is in the 42, and they could build something like, and you're familiar with a TK-60.
Right.
Or you know, a 4.5-inch black and white camera into a color camera.
Right. So they wanted a TK-41 and a TK-60 in one box.
Okay. Yeah. That was. Yeah. There were two versions of a 4.5-inch camera. Did you ever hear anything about that black and white camera?
No.
A 12. Did you ever hear of 12 TK-12 mentioned?
Yes. Yes. Actually.
That was a 4.5-inch image orthicon camera. The 12 was enhanced, and they made a TK-60. That was before I got with the division, and they were starting to move on the 42 when I got there. And a lot of us didn't feel very strongly about four tubes. We didn't have a good color section in that camera. We had Viticons in there.
Right.
They were laggy. You could not scan them at the full scanning raster and on the faceplate of the tube. You couldn't get a 1-inch. They were 1-inch tubes, but we only scanned them at a 0.5-inch to get the lag down. So we needed Plumicons at that point in that camera. But we saw the three Plumicon camera, and we all knew there were tracking problems too with the 42. See, one of the things about four tubes is if you've got a black and white image and you can add red, blue, and green signals to it, you could make a color picture.
Right.
But you had to track the luminance, which was derived from the 4-inch image orthicon. That signal had to track the color section. And if they didn't track, you changed the hue and the color intensity if it didn't track. What happened is the luminance signal would not track, so the camera didn't perform well with an image orthicon because it wasn't linear. It had what they called a knee, and as you ran the light level up on it, it may not hold the same color intensity for various white light levels. And the whole business of four tubes was analyzed by everybody at the time, very complex. And to get it to track was a real tough problem. And we all wanted to get away from it.
Well, Norm Hobson, your boss, actually saw the train wreck that was going on. And the story that I understand is that Norm had some money from another project that he pulled up and started you and Larry and Harry on the 44, on the three-tube 44 without telling anybody. And that was kind of a little secret project. Is that right?
Let's go back to that Plumicon story.
All right.
We knew we needed three Plumicons, and we got it from Amperex and the deflection yokes. I had probably about 50 questions for them on what to do with those tubes, and they gave us answers for everything. And like I told you, I think they figured they were going to make money on those tubes. So came back, and I still had this system going in my head on a TK-44 system by deriving a lot of the circuitry from the 42, and we put out a proposal. And I guess Norm was getting some money from someplace. He had to pay for me. I was doing systems design on the 44. And Harry Wright was working on the design of the box. We had at RCA an industrial design group, and Harry would work with those people and also management to shape the exterior of the camera.
Uh-huh.
And then we had to start thinking about, where do you put the modules? I was piecing together a system, and as you know, you had to have an auxiliary part of that camera. It was a frame of modules that had to go through a camera cable to drive the camera. And we had to do some pretty tricky things in the sense of power. How do you deliver power to a camera? So at the time, switching power supplies, which were totally unknown, were just starting to develop. And that would take a voltage of around 150, plus and minus 150 volts, and convert it for 12 volts. Remember, we're now dealing with solid-state circuits.
Uh-huh.
And the 41 was the last, I guess the 60 may have been in there too, but tube camera, vacuum tube camera.
Right.
After that, we went to solid-state. So you needed 12-volt systems. And so we needed a power supply. We needed a deflection system. We needed the pulse systems. We needed all the video processing. We needed the auxiliary power supplies. All of that was there. We had developed some of those circuits. And I was thinking about driving three Plumicons.
And that's where Fred comes back into the story, right?
Fred came in after we built the 44 models. We built two cameras, engineering models. And I went up to NBC with those two cameras. And I met Fred. And Fred and I showed him what we could do with those two cameras. And that's the story I told you about. He was evaluating a Plumicon, a Philips camera up there. And he knew quite a bit about it. And let's face it, it was doing pretty well.
Right.
And we had the 44s, 44A, and I showed it to him. And he saw some problems with it. He was good. He was really good. He was a systems man, cameras. And he started to, you know, let me know what we had to work on. And I was there as the circuit designer. And I could sit there with him and tell him, let's do it. I can do it this way. If you want it that way, we'll do it. And I would call back to Camden and report on our findings with the camera. And we actually put those 44s on a show up there. It was like a Jeopardy show or something,
uh-huh.
One of those game shows. and I don't remember the name of it, but Fred and I both sat back and let the NBC engineers work those 44s. And we had a lot of problems then. We didn't even have the transistors to do the job. They were just coming in. The viewfinder on the 44 had requirements for some real good power transistors. We were using germanium. They were always blowing out. Every time you look, you blink your eyes at them, they were gone. So at that time, I hope this is all right for you. I'm going to give you some more detail.
Oh, yes.
Well, the people at General Motors were developing a transistor ignition system for cars. That transistor ignition system required transistors for high voltages that were power, and we were able to take those and use them in place of the germaniums that were blowing out. And we put them in the 44A, and we never had any more trouble, and that got us going. And then we put it also in the power supplies. We were always looking at grayscales and trying to run through light ranges and make sure that the colors stayed together. And we had to make some mods there as a result of being up there. Fred was also concerned about stability. And I think I told you the story about using a spray bottle, a coolant, a Freon bottle, and going over and zapping the 60 and watching the picture kind of diverge. The convergence didn't hold on that with temperature. And then we had done deflection systems, which were very stable. And we had to with that 42. It was just starting to come to us that we had to be very stable on color. And we didn't want to see any more hue shifts. We built color flexors, circuits that encoded the signals that were stabilized all at that time. And that all went into the 44A. And that camera performed at high temperature. If you got an approval from Fred Himmelfarb on the stability and the quality of a camera, it went all over the industry, Bobby.
Oh, yes.
And he could sell that camera because they all respected him.
Well, when you hit the 44 with the Freon, it was bulletproof and didn't react at all, did it?
That's correct. The 44s held together, and he was very impressed with that.
Well, I want to switch gears here a little bit, Lou, and I want to go to a little bit smaller camera, and that would be the RCA TK76 ENG camera. And you played a large role in that, didn't you?
Yeah, I was the systems designer on that one also. Let me see if I can pull up a review note here for you. Are you familiar with a TKP45?
Yes.
You are?
I am. Matter of fact, I had one and may get it back. There's a picture of you working on a TKP45 on my site.
Well, the TKP45 was a carrying version of the TK-42, where you could take the TK-42 auxiliary in all of the control systems for the 42, which fed the camera cable to the 42. What we utilized was we used a new camera cable, and we took the TK-42 auxiliary and fed this TKP45, and I'm trying to think now what tubes we had. I think we put 3 plums in there. Yeah, that was 3 plumicons, I believe. Maybe we had some other cameras we were trying, or tubes. We were trying a thing called a Vistacon, which was built by Lancaster, and they were trying to compete with the Plumicon. The preamplifier, the viewfinder, and all of the modules and everything that were required in that carrying, this took a frame on your shoulder and everything to carry it. It was not a 76. It was a bigger camera.
Yes.
But it allowed somebody to use their TK-42s and carry a camera to a remote location rather than a studio.
You did. Was there a backpack to that or no?
Yeah. No. Now, let me see. We took that off. There was a version with a backpack that Advanced Development was working on.
Right.
And we said we can't have that. We made it so it was all included in the head end of that camera. The TKP-45 was three tubes, and you could carry it.
And when do you think that was? What year, roughly?
Got a day here for you, 1974. 7-1-74.
Good. That's good.
And I'm listed here as design responsibility for deflection and pulse modules, responsible for the TKP-45 electrical system design. So, and we made quite a stir at NAB with that because we had some competitors say you cannot run a camera on a camera cable. I guess it was like 150 feet or so at NAB. The manager carried it down the hall and was operating it. But what they didn't realize is we had switching power supplies, but we could also dump higher voltages into the camera cable and monitor the voltages at the other end, at the camera end, and correct it. So we were able to run long distance camera cable and still carry a remote camera using the TK-42 system. Basically, remove that camera and put this TK-45 on somebody's shoulder and let them use it as a camera. That was TKP-45. Now, this was prior to the 76, all of this.
Right. Harry had told me that the reason that TK-76 was called that, because that's when you guys either released it or had the idea for it.
Okay, I'm going to pull out some more of my reviews, and I'm going to send it. It's pretty good chronologically. Mr. Bazin completed the system design of the TK-76 camera. Product design of 76 processing modules, assisted product design of 76 power supply, deflection, pulse systems, TK-76 factory and field support eventually, assisted in preparation and demonstration of the 76 camera at the NAB convention of 1976. Here's some comments. The 76 camera was designed and shipped from manufacturing on schedule, and that was 1976. You're right. Customer acceptance has been excellent. Design and pre-production stages, major contribution to a successful debut of the camera.
You got any idea how many they sold of those?
About 3,000.
Wow, that's a lot worldwide.
We actually had a birthday cake we put together when the 3,000 camera left the factory. That was a fun project for us. We had about 6 engineers going.
Well, Harry had to design the casing to put the 76 in.
And well, Harry came in on that. They needed some help on that. Bobby, let me give you a little bit of background on that. We had a great manager in the group. His name was Tony Lind. Tony Lind. And Tony and I had a rapport that gave us this 76. And we were going to build a handheld camera. Our advanced development group had put a handheld camera together with 3 1-inch Plumicons. No, these were half-inch Plumicons. Let me go back. 3 half-inch Plumicons. The advanced development guys had done that, except they had a backpack, too. And Tony and I got together, and we got to take the backpack out of there. We just have to put it on your shoulder. And I went away, and I sketched up that case. And I visualize just plugging the modules in the side of the case. And we needed the prism that the advanced development people put together. They were great in optics and colorimetry. And they gave us the prism. They gave us the lens for that camera, the tubes, and the deflection yokes. And we sketched up a layout for that case. And Tony had some comments about, we were discussing, where do you put the microphone? Where do you put the switches that turned it off and on and things like that?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we laid all that out. And we had a couple of mechanicals working on that. And they started to put the case together. And at that time, they needed, and Harry, I guess, was off on something else. And he was working on tape, I think, at the time, tape recording. And he came in, and I'm not sure what that chronology was exactly, but he held those mechanicals. And he did a lot of the ergonomics work, which was important because he had all that experience, you know, like the D-handle stuff and all that.
Yeah. We'll just pass over that part.
He was pretty good at telling you, you know, whether you could put a camera on your shoulder or anything. But these guys had worked that out pretty well, and we drew it up pretty well.
What was the other camera? There was a smaller camera, but it fit inside of a hard camera body. It was really, in essence, kind of the first build-up kit. It was basically a shoulder-mounted camera, but it fit inside of a studio.
Okay, TK-760.
Yes, 760.
Okay, the 760 was a frame. Harry was involved in that, and two other mechanicals. You haven't heard their names yet, but Al Schakowsky was the guy that did a lot of the mechanics. He worked in the advanced development group too, so he knew a lot about putting something together pretty quickly. And there was one other guy, and I think he's gone now. We had four engineers, electronic engineers, and we were starting to develop integrated circuits too at that time, and they went into the TK 760. Now, you're asking me about a smaller camera.
No, well, that's it. The 76 was the studio version of it was the 760.
Yeah, here's what was happening. We had a 76, and we wanted to put bigger lenses on it.
Right.
We figured, why not use that camera on a tripod in a football stadium? Why do you need anything else? What would you need a studio camera for if a 76 was making great pictures? And by the way, it was making great pictures. So what would you need a studio camera, but you needed a big lens. You needed a zoom on the thing.
Right.
And how would you hang a lens that weighed many pounds, that was 2 feet long, on a 76 that went on your shoulder? Look at it as a large lens adapter, but also a mating circuitry to run the 76. So you could take a 76, take a 760, take the covers off of it, and put a 76 inside it.
Was the support equipment any different from the 760 as compared to the 76?
You're right on. You needed, when you turn the 76 into a studio camera, which is what you're doing now. You got a big lens on a portable camera, but when you put it on a football stadium, by the way, it was shown at 760 for the first time on the Orange Bowl. And it had the 76 going in it. Fred was there with me. We were both down there. And his comment was, he was quite impressed when the guy could put it, a 760 under his arm, go up a ladder onto that moving platform that they had on the side of the field. And the guy put it under his arm, and that 760 had a long camera cable on it. with the mating circuitry that I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
And also, we needed a control unit in the trucks. The remote television trucks had to have a control unit that could run the levels. You know, a director, he wanted somebody there to control the output of that camera.
Right.
So there was a little box. It was about 1 foot square that was developed with the 760 that the camera cable went into, and it had some more mating circuitry. And we had to build up, in fact, there's some patents involved in that one we came up with on how to run 200 feet of cable or 300 foot, I don't recall the exact number, to a camera and get equalization for it. We came up with an automatic circuit equalizer in that camera. That was used on the 47, the later cameras.
Right.
And also we had synchronizing system on the 760 that as you varied the camera cable, it equalized, it took care of the losses, and also the color burst and everything was in the right place, and you could take the output off that little 1 foot square box in the truck and feed it right into your video systems, and it went on the air. And all of the synchronizing equipment was developed with that combination.
Did you work on the 45 and 46 also?
They were handed over to another group. When we were at RCA, I was off the 44 at that point.
Did you work on the 47?
I was probably responsible for a lot of the circuits. They lifted a lot of those circuits from the 44. Okay. The 47 was a takeoff on the 44. The difference for the 47 was we were starting to get into the computer age, and they wanted to computerize some of the setup facilities.
Right.
So that's what the 47 was. It was basically a 44. And some of the circuits, believe it or not, we developed for the 76. See, I was off on the 76. The 47 was being handed over to another group.
Was Larry Thorpe on the 47 group?
Larry was, he was in that group. And what happened was he decided to leave the company at that point.
Yeah, he went with Sony.
Went to Sony, yeah. Yeah, well, Larry and I are still good friends. We call them the leprechaun. He was red bearded and red hair, and don't tell him that. He probably won't laugh at that one. but he was good. He got that program started, but there were some other very great engineers who worked on some of the circuitry on that camera.
Well, I want to ask you.
Did you ever hear the name Bob Dischert anywhere?
Yes, I've heard the name. I don't know.
Bob Dischert passed away. And I don't remember exactly on that. But Bob was one of these guys that came up with these ideas out of the clear blue. And they were crazy ideas, but they were good ideas. And he had ways of looking at things that were different. Bob was not academically trained. He didn't go to college, I don't believe. But his mind was so creative that he would come up with things, and we were academically trained. Tony and Hobson and the managers of the group, we all went, you know, and had all the classical electronics training and everything. And I used to listen to Bob and just be amazed at what he would come up with. So he was involved in the concept of setup, computer setup on the 47. And I guess he worked with Larry Thorpe. Larry, I think they made a manager or something at that time. And he wasn't doing circuit design anymore. He came in and did the as far as I know, he probably did some of the systems work on the 47. But I don't know what circuits he developed on the 47. Because he was a guy that could have been a great salesman, you know. And some of us weren't good salesmen. We were just circuit designers. And so Larry was very convincing. And so when Bob was proposing computer design and Larry was proposing it, the 47 started to come into being. And Larry left, and they hired a very competent guy to take over the 47. That was Jack Monahan. Jack Monahan actually left later also. He went up to New England and worked on some cameras up there. But it was medical stuff, I think. So I got involved in the 47. They were there were a lot of system problems with it. And I've been down that road on the 44. And I spent probably 6 months working on some problems on the 47, just getting it to make stuff that Fred would have picked up, you know?
Right.
I was skilled by him. He taught me so much, Bobby. If you ever talk to him, just tell him thanks. And that 6 months I spent with him, I learned more about camera systems than the whole time I was with the group, practically. But he showed me what it took to get a picture, you know. Fred was a delight to work with. He was great. And it was comical the whole time. You know, like, he didn't tell me get out of here or anything like that, you know, or this is no good, you know, or something like that.
Right.
That's the stuff that you get. But he and I had a rapport. And from that time on, anything that we developed, I would just think, if we could get through Fred, we got a sales item, you know, we could sell something. And guys would call him from the whole industry and say, what's good, you know, what can we use this camera? And he would put his blessing on it, and sure enough, they'd buy them. So it was something that you had to get his approval on. And that's how much respected, how well respected he was. So I was on the 76 at that point, and we even got a Sarnoff Award. I got a medal on that, a gold medal. That was quite a thing to get that. Oh, by the way, at this time, I was starting to think about our future. The 47 was coming in. We had a 76. By the way, we showed it at NAB. Bobby, the next year, Ikigami had almost an exact copy, not an exact copy, a better copy of it. I don't know how they did it.
What year would that be?
Well, we showed it in 76, I guess. And it might have been 77 or 78. The Ikigami 77. Yeah, they picked up the next number.
Well, that was the beginning of the end, wasn't it?
You got it. And I saw the handwriting at that point. I was very impressed with what they had done. And we weren't getting the support now from the corporation.
Right.
And there were some decisions made. Arch was working on tape at the time, and he can tell you a lot about some of those decisions. I don't know what brought them, but we were behind the times a little bit on tape, and the company decided that we really weren't going to make it. So they weren't putting the money in. I didn't see anything coming for new developments, and I got very discouraged, depressed, and I decided to go off to the Morristown plant, which was doing radar. And Aegis was a big thing at the time.
Right.
It was being built for the Navy, and we had other radars they were developing, and I was television, and I could build circuits for radar just as well. And I went to work doing design reviews out there, and I learned a lot about radar and signal processing with radar. They were so far ahead of broadcast in terms of using computer control of video. They could process video better than broadcast could do it.
Why didn't that translate back to broadcast?
The money wasn't coming there. The money was in Aegis. The Navy was paying those bills.
Oh, I
see.
There
was a lot of money being poured into the Morristown plant because that was government, you see. And the Navy liked Aegis. They were turning out those systems on many ships. And we had something that protected us pretty well. So a broadcast, we had Hawkeye coming along at that point. Let me go back a little bit. I went, and it was around 1983. I can give you that date exactly. I have a review from when I went into Morristown as a consultant, basically. And I worked there, and it was 1983, and Hawkeye was starting to come in. This was the solid-state pickup camera. You familiar with that?
Yes, I've heard of that.
Hawkeye was the first attempt by broadcast to go solid-state pickup. It was a device that was designed by the Lancaster division. Now Lancaster was on board as far as getting vacuum tubes out of their system and building solid-state. So there was a solid-state pickup device, three tubes or three solid-state devices. That was called Hawkeye. And they picked up a lot of circuitry from the 76 on that. But now the division closed down in Camden, and they moved to Gibbsboro, New Jersey. And I had gone over to Aegis, and Arch had gone up to, he was chief engineer at that time. He had gone up to Princeton to work, and he was starting to work on HDTV up there. And there were guys going full bore on a high-definition television up there at the Sarnoff Laboratories.
Lou, we're almost out of time, though, and I want to ask you if there's anything that we passed over that you haven't brought up, or maybe talk about your visit with Arch Luther this past weekend.
Arch and I just went to lunch together, and he had written some books, quite a few books, on high-definition television, because it was an offshoot of what he had done up at the lab. So we talked about that you were putting together a studio and old cameras, and I even told Arch I was really impressed and thankful that you were doing that.
Thank you. Thank
he
you.
Knew about it. He knew about it. You know, if you were around at the time, we could have given you the engineering models, which were trashed, and they were the first, you know?
So much got lost and thrown away. Lytle Hoover, you know, who worked with RCA in the product development, had records and records and records that he made for them to keep, you know, after everything closed down, and they threw them away too.
Yep, exactly. Even had a group that, you know, put those magazines together, the broadcast magazines, and they kept records for a lot of things, and as far as I know, that was all trashed. It's sad, isn't it, that 176 that I have is one engineering model that I kept.
And
I don't know where the 760 went, engineering model. I was gone at that point.
And all the cameras before it, the 41, the 42, the 43s, all the 44s, and all the engineering models of that are gone too.
Your 60s, your 10s, you know, there was a whole bunch of work that was done. I spent a lot of time on a TK-28, which was a film camera. Let me give you one quick piece of information that you might mention somewhere. A TK-27 was a film camera that was built after the TK-26. The TK-26 was a film camera that had three Vidicons in it. The TK-27 came in with the TK-42, and it was four tubes. The 26 three Vidicon camera was three tubes, and then the 27 was four tubes. And it had a 1.5-inch Vidicon for the luminance, and three Vidicons for color, just like the 42 idea. And I worked on that. And then when the Plumicons came in, we built another TK-26 almost with three, instead of three Vidicons, we built it with three Plumicons. It was an offshoot of the 44. So that was the TK-28 film camera. Very successful.
Lou, I want to thank you for sharing your time and memories today. And I don't mean just today, July 18th, 2011, because from here on, today will be kind of whatever day in the future that someone listens to this. And preserving this information is why we're doing this. Very few have ever done what you've done, and for what you've done so well, thank you.
I appreciate it very much, Bobby. I'm just so impressed that you're